You were just listening to I Dream by Roxana Panufnik, as performed by the Joyful Company of Singers, conducted by Peter Broadbent. That selection begins a very special 2.5 hours here on Classical Discoveries. My guest is the English composer of Polish descent, Roxana Panufnik, who is here from England for performances of her music in Philadelphia this coming weekend. Roxana Panufnik is one of the UK's most popular and loved composers whose works have struck a deep emotional chord with audiences everywhere. Since studying composition at London's Royal Academy of Music, Roxana has since written a wide range of pieces, including opera, ballet, music theater, choral works, chamber compositions, and music for film and television, which are regularly performed all over the world. Roxana's compositions have been recorded by many companies, including Warner Classics and EMI Classics. 2011 and 12 includes premieres with artists such as Tasman Little and the London Mozart Players, Chanticleer, bassoonist Julie Price with the Weehan String Quartet, Kevin Kenner and the Szymanowski String Quartet, and an oratorio in Latin and Estonian for the Tallinn Philharmonic Orchestra, youth choirs, Elite of Tallinn, Patricia Rosario, conducted by Mihail Gerz, and commissioned to celebrate their ascension to European Capital of Culture in 2011. Roxana has also been appointed inaugural associate composer with the London Mozart Players for the years 2012 to 2015. This will involve a major retrospective of her orchestral works and further commissions during her tenure. Well, Roxana, I am excited to have you here today. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Marvin. Thank you.
It was a really excitement that this was able to work out because you are here in the States for performances of your music this coming weekend.
That's right. That's right. We've got the world premiere of my new Magnificat and Nunc Dimittis at St. Mark's Episcopal Church in Philadelphia on Sunday. Very excited about that.
Very good. Very good. And we'll be talking about that excitement a little later.
Good.
Because we've got so much to discuss here. I mean, the work, first of all, we began with has a very interesting background. Just share a little bit about that piece.
Okay, well, actually, it's adapted from a movement from an environmental cantata, which was my first proper commission back in the early 1990s from Twickenham Choral Society. And environmental issues were very much in the news all the time. It was just when everybody was really becoming aware of them. But also at that time, while I was writing it, it was a very difficult time. My father was very ill. He was he had sort of final stages of cancer, and it was a very sad time. But this was obviously writing this was very cathartic, and then it was actually premiered after he died, and we dedicated the concert to him, which was wonderful. So when I was approached 10 years later by a Garland for Linda, who were collecting choral pieces to form this garland in memory of Linda McCartney and to raise funds for cancer, it seemed an obvious piece to give them, and I adapted it for a cappella choir, and I thought Joyful Company of Singers did it beautifully.
Yeah, it's a beautiful performance, and they've done other works of yours as well.
Well, we've worked a lot, and that particular collaboration has sparked off lots of exciting things. They've commissioned stuff. I've made a whole new CD of music with them, and we carry on working together, and it's been a wonderful partnership.
Well, that is great, Roxana. Well, you know, I would like to go back to the beginning, and the very, very beginning, and people will know why when I continue. Your father, I think, is simply one of the great composers of the 20th century. He sadly, though, not as well known here in America as he should be. And I'm talking, of course, of Andrzej Panufnik, who is your father. And he's also one of my favorites, as I've said, of the 20th century. When did you realize, as a little child, who your father really was? And did you remember an event that made you realize that?
I wasn't even a child anymore. It was actually when I went to music college when I was 18.
Oh, my gosh. So it took quite a while then.
Yeah, wow. I just thought everybody had fathers who were composers and did concerts. And obviously not through my teens. I became a bit more aware. But I didn't realize how well known and how respected he was in the music world until I went to music college, and which is a bit bizarre. And not through a very positive way either, because, excuse me, frog in my throat.
No, that. By the way, Roxana has a little bit of jet lag. She arrived from England yesterday afternoon. I just had a good...
I am awake.
No, you seem fine.
because at music college, I had a great time there and I learned a lot, but there were a few students there who were a bit... I don't know whether it was sour grapes or, but they sort of implied that I only got into music college because of whose daughter I was. And that was a part of a sort of awakening, really. But it all worked out for the good. And I've always been very proud of being his daughter, and also very proud of continuing the family line. I think, you know, in the States, you see, have a lot of children of film stars becoming film actors themselves and doing really well. And it's wonderful. And I think it's a very honorable thing to continue your family business. But there are always going to be people who are going to snipe, aren't there?
Yeah, yeah. So what that says, which is interesting, your father must have been an extremely modest man towards his talent.
He was very modest, and he never really talked about his work a great deal to us as children. I think probably because he felt we wouldn't get it. Although a lot of his music is very instantly accessible and lovely for anyone, whether they're musically knowledgeable or not, to listen to. There's a very profound background, both sort of with spirituality and also geometry we just weren't going to get when we were kids. Mm. And so, you know, he was very much dad and lovely, lovely father. And he used to work from a studio at the end of the garden. And we knew we weren't supposed to go and interrupt him, but we always used to tap on the window and he was always pleased to see us.
Oh, that's sweet.
So, it wasn't really until much later that I was really aware of who he was and what he'd done. Mm.
Real quickly, relating to the early years with your dad, do you remember one very special memory you shared with him when you were very young? There must have been so many, though.
There are so many, and it's really hard to choose. And I think one thing that I always think about is we used to go for walks together down by the river near where we lived. Mm. We used to have a dog, and we used to go for walks. And we used to walk along in very companionable silence, and I'd be sort of 9 or 10. And suddenly he would sort of burst out in a kind of vocalized percussion part of whatever he was working on. And I remember at the time being absolutely mortified and sort of very nervously looking around me to see what people were thinking. And I think it's so funny because now I probably would have joined in. Mm. But we were very, very, very close. And he was a very, very loving, unconditionally loving father. He was wonderful. I was very lucky to have him and my mother.
It sounds wonderful. We'll be talking a little more about him later on. But now, let's go directly just to you.
Okay.
When did you actually start studying music, and where were you trained, and, you know, some of your early musical studies?
Well, through my childhood, my parents had a lot of friends who were professional musicians, and they tended to be quite pushy with their children and forcing them to work really hard at their instruments. And my parents decided to take a more liberal attitude. So they did let me start and give up quite a lot of instruments, which now is fantastic because I have a very good practical background for when I'm writing
That's right, that's right.
But one of the difficult issues was that I really wasn't interested, even from the age of 3, playing other people's music. I always wanted to make my own. Mm. And I refused to learn to read music until a quite late stage. And then finally, it really sort of took off in my teens. And it became very clear while I was at school that I was very lazy academically and didn't fulfill my potential at all. But music college and the Royal Academy of Music, where I ended up, seemed to be the place for me. And I studied composition there as my first study. And I used to play the harp. Harp was my second study. And that's why a lot of my pieces have harp in it. I try and get it in as much as possible.
Very good. Very good. Well, we will be discussing, as mentioned, your visit to Philadelphia a little later on. Let's go, though, now to a short selection for piano quartet titled Let Me Be. How did this work come into being?
Well, it's an adaptation of a small short part of my piano trio, Around Three Corners. And it's been adapted for the Schubert Ensemble in London, made a fantastic scheme called Chamber Music 2000, where they commission composers to write small pieces, but only up to a sort of what, I don't know whether you have associated board exams here, but grade 3, grade 4 standard, so that school kids could play alongside professional musicians. And so I adapted this little bit from my piano trio to go for this scheme.
Right. Well, we're going to hear this piece now. This is Let Me Be by my guest Roxana Panufnik. The Schubert Ensemble performs. You were just listening to music by my guest, Roxana Panufnik. That was her composition, Let Me Be. It was performed by the Schubert Ensemble and NMC Compact Disc. Well, Roxana, welcome back. It's again great to have you here. We're going to go for a little while into your visit to Philadelphia this coming Sunday. Your music will be presented twice at St. Mark's Church in Philadelphia. Once in the morning and once in the afternoon at 4 p.m., which is part of an Evensong, I believe.
That's right. That's right.
Tell us a little bit about, before we give the location and phone number, tell us a bit about the presentations of your works, what's happening.
Well, the main reason, as you said, was the premiere of my new Evening Canticles, which my computer spell checker very sweetly calls Evening Catnip. I rather wanted to keep that. But people wouldn't know what I was talking about. But the Magnificat, it's the first time I've written these. And, you know, they're a very stable part of the sort of Anglican evensong tradition. And it was very exciting. And I was so happy because having wished to do this for some time, then two very different bodies asked me if I'd do it. St. Mark's Church in Philadelphia, but also a Bristol based choir in the UK called the Exultate Singers, and they both asked at the same time, so they've co-commissioned it.
Oh, nice.
And the world premiere is here, and then the UK premiere is in London in May with the Exultate Singers. And I've taken a slightly different approach because the Magnificat is, it's all about the Virgin Mary. It's her reaction and her feelings after she's been told by the angel Gabriel that she is expecting God's son, Jesus. And what I've done at the suggestion of an Anglican priest is I've actually juxtaposed this text over the Ave Maria. It's two choirs, and one choir has the Magnificat text, and the second choir has the Ave Maria, but all in harmony together, because the Ave Maria is the words of the angel to Mary saying, you're expecting a baby. So those words are very much in her mind as she's expressing her feelings in the Magnificat. And they last about 10 minutes altogether. And I had to be very careful with the Magnificat because it's a long text and I could have quite happily made it just 9 or 10 minutes itself. But you have to remember that people are standing throughout it. So I had to hold back on that.
Yeah.
but I'm very excited. And in the morning, they're doing my latest, my last but one mass setting, Schola Missa de Angelis, which is based on the Missa de Angelis plain song, beautiful 9th century plain song. And I've taken it and I've put my own harmonies underneath it. And they're going to be doing that in the morning.
Yeah, it's one wonderful quite a bit of music, you know, has been taken plain song to this day and age and put the contemporary harmonies with it. The first thing that, of course, comes to people's mind would be the Durafle Requiem.
Yes.
And, but there's such a wonderful, they have that archaic sound, but they kind of come to life with the harmonies of today.
Yes. And the other thing that I love about them is they actually, if you sort of are quite strict about the rhythm of the Latin and where the accents lie, it actually swings. It's in all sorts of compound time signatures, like you have a 5/8 and a 7/8, and it moves beautifully. But if you take that sort of strong rhythmic emphasis away, when it's being sung on its own and doesn't have to be accompanied at all, it's like it's almost timeless. It's otherworldly.
It is,
because it's sung in a very reverberant acoustic, it does sound like it's coming from heaven. I do love plain song. It's wonderful.
I do too. It's wonderful, and it does put you into such a peaceful feeling of meditation. There's something so strong. It's simple as the lines are, there's something so incredibly strong about it.
Yeah.
You know, well, that's going to be great. And again, St. Mark's Church is located at 1625 Locust Street in Philadelphia. The phone number is 215-735-1416. Again, that's 215-735-1416. And that will be at 4 p.m. this coming Sunday afternoon, and that will be a very exciting event. Looking forward to it. Now, you have composed, Roxana, many religious choral works, including Latin texts over the years. But I have to say, you have quite an interesting religious background. Your mother is actually Jewish.
She is. She comes from a very ancient Jewish, English Jewish family who came over to the UK from Holland in the 18th century. And she, although she's not practicing Jewish. Mm-hmm. She still is very much has elements of that culture, as do her family. And interestingly, a lot of her and her siblings married Catholics, as like she did with my dad. Yeah. But it all comes from the same place, doesn't it? It's mm-hmm. all the same God, and the Judeo-Christian connection goes back to the beginning of time, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much interest to bring it together. In fact, every year I do a special program around Easter time called Sacred Bridges, which has kind of elements of all religions, including things from the Middle Eastern and all that. Mm. So there is a real tremendous, the bottom line, I think, is to be good to people and the usual and believe in something, you know, and everybody believes and does what they want, but combining all this brings us all together, which is what I think.
And it's
all
really
about.
Important not to leave out Islam, because of course they also have the same one God as we do.
Sure.
And I'm actually reading the Quran at the moment, and there are so many parallels with our Christian Bible. They have Mary, Joseph, Jesus, Job, Noah, it's all there. And I don't think people realize that. And I think a lot more, it would be great if a lot more was done, you know, to bring the three monotheistic faiths together, either through music or through art. Mm-hmm. Or even through food and culinary traditions. Yeah. You know, there's so many ways.
Concentrate on the similarities.
Exactly.
Rather
than the differences.
All the time.
Exactly.
And I think that's very exciting. And which, that leads us to our next selection. A good segue, I thought. Anyway, this is a piece you wrote for a project presented by Chanticleer titled The Boy Whose Father Was God. Tell us about the project and your contribution to it.
Well, Chanticleer, their director at the time, Matt Altman, had this idea about doing a whole concert covering the life of Jesus. And it was a fantastic concept and a very dramatic one as well. And they asked me if I'd do something about his childhood. And they sent me, I'd never come across these before, the Infancy Gospels of Thomas. And these are quite controversial because in some places it does talk about how Jesus as a boy, you know, perhaps used his special powers, not always for the good, maybe in revenge over some boyish prank or something. But the particular story I chose is really a wonderful one. He's walking along one day and he hears a woman wailing and that her child is dead. And he comes to the house and he says, "What's happening?" And they tell him, and he says, "Let me in," because he wants to try and help her in some way. And they won't, because they've heard about all the negative things he's done. They won't let him in. And then the mother hears that he's at the door, and she says, "Well, you know, what harm can he do? The child's dead. Mm. You know, there's nothing worse can happen." And so they do let him in. And he brings a child back to life. It's a beautiful, beautiful story. And for this, I was given the most fantastic Yemeni Jewish chant. And it's
wonderful.
One of the oldest. Some people believe that it could be around 2,000 years old. So it could have been a chant that was sung around the time of Jesus' life. I can't guarantee that, but I think it's the closest to what we have. And you'll hear that. It's a mourner's Kaddish, the prayer for the dead. And it goes right throughout the piece. Someone is singing it. And it starts off with the mother singing it. And the mother is played by the most amazing alto called Adam Baker. Is that Adam Baker or Matthew Baker? I'm sorry. I can't see. Sorry, everybody, I can't remember, but I'll correct myself later.
That's okay. Well, but, like I said, you're
a jet lag. But he was amazing. exactly. And he's, you know, this 24-year-old guy putting himself vocally and emotionally in the shoes of a mother who's lost a child. It was really heartbreaking, as I'm sure you'll hear.
Well, we're going to hear this now. This is Let Me In by my guest, Roxana Panufnik, and this was commissioned by Chanticleer the ensemble we hear in 2010.
It's gone!